Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Good morning, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMA Career and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Jen Fulmer. She's the Executive Director for Boots to Roots. For all you out there who don't know what Boots to Roots is, we're going to learn about it today. It's a great nonprofit bridging the gap from serving our country to strengthening Maine communities. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, Boots to Roots, tell me about its origin. Tell me about its history. Tell me about where it came from. Tell me about you. Let's do the whole gamut here.
I will gladly. I'll tell you about the history of Boots to Roots. It's more important. It's more interesting than me, for starters. So Dave Hickey is the founder of Boots to Roots. Dave Hickey is a Maine native, grew up in West Gardner, Maine. His family is a big logging family. He knows everybody. He stayed connected. Kept coming back to West Gardner over the years during his Air Force career, and then came and retired to West Gardner, Maine. Dave spent 23 years in the Air Force, and he, towards the end of his career, he was in Virginia, and he had already moved his family back to West Gardner, Maine. He had to retire very quickly due to some family issues they were working on, and he almost retired overnight, so he had absolutely no prior preparation. He drove up to Maine in January in the middle of the night, called a couple of his friends that he'd stayed connected to and said, hey, look, I'm going to be looking for a job, but I'm going to be going through some family issues, and I need to get some income coming in. And so they were able to help him get some part-time employment. He started doing some part-time teaching, and then he was roughing, and he was coaching, and he pieced together about five jobs at one time as he was taking care of family issues, as he was applying for his future career. He ended up getting into some financial difficulty. He was not able to get a job. He sent out about 80 applications. He finally got an interview at a fairly well-known national company that's represented in Maine. And the first interview went very well, and then he had a second interview with the head of HR, and the head of HR looked at him in the interview and said, I can't believe you don't have PTSD with all those deployments. And he did not get the job, and eventually he got hired at BIW, Bath Iron Works, and our board president and co-founder, John Manganiello, was on the hiring panel and advocated for Dave, and then Dave was hired teaching in the apprenticeship program through the Maine Maritime. And he and John worked side by side together, and Dave explained the whole process that he went through in transition. And he said, you know, he thought to himself, you know, if he is a retired colonel with 23 years of service, an advanced degree, commanded at two levels, which is the equivalent of being a CEO in two different sized organizations, stayed connected to his roots, and still had these issues when he got out, you know, what's happening to folks who've only been in 4 to 6 years, or maybe they're not even from Maine. And so he started to examine that there was a real gap for active duty people coming back to Maine. There's no real active duty base in Maine anymore. There's a Portsmouth Naval Shipyard in Kittery, but that's not really a traditional active duty base. And so there's a lot of National Guard support, and there's a lot of support for veterans in the state of Maine, as long as you're tied into the network. But when you get back from active duty, if you come to Maine without any prior connections or any prior planning or coordination or anything like that, and you start from scratch when you get here, it can take a significant amount of time to get hired, and you can quickly get into financial instability. And so Dave came up with the concept of Boots to Roots. Dave and John, they came up with this concept. They helped folks by word of mouth for about a year and a half. They helped 15 folks get jobs or get apprenticeships. Somebody would say to them, hey, Dave, my son or daughter's coming back in a few months. You know, can you work with them? Can you talk to them? And so that's how Boots to Roots was born. I retired from the Air Force in September of 2015, and I was starting my official job search in January of 2016. So I took that fall to sort of gather my thoughts. I wanted to give back to the community. I wanted to do some community research. I got involved in a nonprofit board, was on a committee for another nonprofit, joined Maine Association of Nonprofits, went to board boot camp, tried to figure out how I wanted to use my post 9/11 GI Bill so that I could actually get some nonprofit management education. Well, I was doing all that in the fall, and then Dave called me literally about 2 weeks into my official job search, and I used to work for Dave in the Air Force. He was one of my first B-1 instructors, and we flew together, and I've known him for over 20 years, and I respect him tremendously. I would take a bullet for him. That's how much I respect him. So he called me, and he told me about the concept of Boots to Roots, and I said, that's a fantastic organization, and he said, will you be on the board? And I said, absolutely, I'll be on the board, and come to find out that the board hadn't really been put together yet. It was John and Dave trying to do this and trying to build a nonprofit while they're both working full-time jobs. And so we decided that we'd take this on together and I would roll into the executive director role to try to build this thing out. So we became a nonprofit 501c3 organization in May of 2016. And we have been hitting the ground running and continuing to build our team and build our development and our donor base and build our client base. And we call our clients teammates, by the way, because we are teaming with them. And we're all folks that are sort of – all the folks who are helping them directly have been there, done that.
So we're talking with Jen Fulmer, Executive Director of Boots to Roots. And I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And we're talking about this great organization, this nonprofit, which bridges the gap between serving our country to strengthening Maine's communities. So tell me a little about the goals of the organization. What's its overall focus and mission? You kind of told me the mission. I get the mission part. Tell me about the goals. How do you put this into practical effect?
So I'll give you some statistics that are out there. There's been a few different reports that have been published, and these are all reports within the last 5 years, that almost 50% of military members who separate or retire from the military do not stay in their first post-military job for even a year. There's a number of different reasons for that. One of the reasons, no doubt, is that folks get close to coming back, and they start to panic if they haven't gotten anything, and they take the first thing that comes along, and then maybe it's not the right pay or it's not the right job, what have you. There's other number of reasons why folks aren't sticking around for even a year. Also, financial stability. I mentioned before that if you come to Maine and you're starting from scratch when you get here, it can take a tremendous amount of time. I hear from a lot of employers that when they see military resumes, it's very confusing. And unless you're an employer that is destined and has a goal to actually hire veterans, that can discourage HR folks from going any further with that resume. So we do a tremendous amount of work with translating resumes, not just translating terms, but looking at a job description and really really putting into words what that person did in the Air Force or the Army or the Navy and Marines, and really translating that into something that when an HR person looks at that can say, yes, I can see how this person can benefit my company.
World, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the financial instability part is really one of the things we're trying to address, because if you come back from a deployment, if you come back from service and you have maybe you have some PTSD, which most people can manage normally with no issues at all. Say you have family issues, you're going through a divorce, or you have special needs kids, or you have other family issues that we have as human beings. Every family has them.
Sure.
If you get into financial instability because you're not getting hired, that can quickly exacerbate all of those other issues, any and all of those other issues that you may have. Also, if you collect unemployment, that can do something not good to your psyche. And unemployment doesn't really cover expenses anyway. So the financial instability piece is really one of the things that we're trying to address. So our goals are that folks will get hired within 2 months of coming to Maine, that they will be connected with whatever transition services that they may need before and during their transition. For instance, if you need a realtor, if you're coming to a part of Maine that you're not from or you're not familiar with and you want to know a good school for your kids, if you want to know what the closest veterans benefits person is that you can talk to, if you want to know if there's recreational activities for veterans or just for anybody, et cetera, et cetera. So we want to make sure folks have warm handoff connections to any of those different things that they need. And then the third goal is that they stay in their first post-military job for at least a year. I was recently at the HR conference, and one of the discussions was that that first year is the critical year for any employee. To stay involved. And so we have a conscious effort through peer mentoring and keeping in touch with the folks to make sure that they stay in their first post-military job for a year. So those are the three goals. The reason that we have a goal of hired within 2 months of coming to Maine is because all military people are entitled to 30 days of leave per year, paid leave per year. You can carry over 30 days. So you can carry 60 days of year per, of leave per year. Most people will save up their leave when they're getting ready to separate or retire, and we call that terminal leave. For instance, I retired officially on the 1st of September, but I came to Maine in July. That last 2 months, I was collecting a full active duty paycheck. So the two-month goal that we have is for folks to get hired while they're still getting a paycheck, or to have a very small gap between when they're hired and when they start getting their paycheck. The whole way that we do that is prior preparation. And so what Boots to Roots will do is we are the only organization in Maine that is working proactively with folks while they are still on active duty before they come back to Maine, ideally up to a year before they come back, so we can prep them ahead of time, well in advance, with self-assessment, resume work, interview prep. We hope to do that all within the first 2 to 3 months of somebody contacting us, depending on how close they are to coming back. If they contact us 2 months out, obviously this timeline gets compressed. But the idea is now that we are working through how to write a resume, how to use a job description, getting a basic resume that aligns with the industry or the particular job focus area where that person wants to work. Then we have an interview prep person. His name is Bruce McMillan. He is amazing. He's a Navy veteran from the Vietnam era who was in destroyers in the European theater, came back and went into business for over 20 years, and then he ran his own consulting firm for over 20 years doing executive mentorship and has done mock interviewing for a couple of the universities in the state for the last 12 years. He is not only a personal mentor to me, but he has done a tremendous amount for Boots to Roots. So he will take everybody and do at least an hour of initial interview prep where he talks about how to research a company. He talks about how to answer a question, how to format a question, how to ask questions, and all the sort of etiquette that goes along with thank you notes and you name it. And then when that person actually gets an interview, he will do another session with them to specifically prep them for that particular interview. And so all that we try to front load and then try to start networking for folks. So the folks who are on active duty are actively doing job searches, and we give them little gentle pushes to make sure they continue to do that. And then we will network for them by building relationships. Myself, our volunteers, our board members, the HR conference, for instance, I attended the HR conference for purposes of networking for our teammates. And learning about the latest and greatest that's going on in HR these days so that I can pass that on so I can better prepare people to hit the ground running when they get to Maine.
You've taken some real efforts to make that networking work. Talk to us a little bit about how you've done that, because, look, HR is sometimes seen as the enemy when it comes to hiring, right? They're the buffer zone, and yet they can be a huge asset if really used and tapped wisely. Tell me about that networking.
Well, we are still an all-volunteer organization, and so I've got to really balance my time between active network efforts and actually doing the hands-on mission of doing resumes with people, which takes a lot of time back and forth on the phone. I was on the phone 2 hours yesterday with one of our teammates talking through what he did and how we needed to translate that. That said, I try to take advantage of every opportunity we have to do networking, whether we're a member of the Portland Chamber for that reason, and really trying to get to know folks. With HR individuals from different companies, what we like to do is I want them to know who we are. I want them to know that Boots to Roots has a vested interest in advancing their company and in providing great talent for them. We're not a placement firm, but to just know who we are and who we're working with coming back. And then being able to have an open door. So, for instance, if I know you, David, and I know that you're running a particular company and you periodically are looking for, employees in a certain area, And maybe you don't have an open job right now, but we've established a relationship. I know you have a great company culture that, you know, prior military would fit in great and really be able to enhance. And then when I'm working with people, people call us all the time. We're getting different folks. We're working with all five services, everybody from a 30-year colonel with 2 degrees and speaks 4 languages down to an airman who was in for 2 years and has a high school diploma and is getting medically retired and everything in between. And so when I have people coming back, if I see someone say, oh, as we're talking through what they want to do and what where their skills are, I remember talking to David, this would be a perfect fit. I can shoot an email to you or give you a phone call. Hey, David, I know we talked. I don't know if you have anything open, but I just wanted to provide this resume to you. And so having that opportunity to be able to just have a relationship like that where, I'm not a placement, you're not paying me to give you anybody, but just trying to expand that network as much as we can. So we have all these different possibilities of places, knowing the employee needs, and then knowing where the folks that we're working with might fit in.
We're talking with Jen Fulmer. She's the Executive Director for Boots to Roots. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLLB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Jen Fulmer. She's the Executive Director for Boots to Roots. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we're having more fun than one should be allowed talking about this great organization. Again, Boots to Roots is a organization that bridges the gap from serving our country to strengthening Maine communities. So, you know, we talked a little bit about in the first segment what the organization does, some of the goals. Talk to me about the reception you're getting. Tell me a little bit about how employers are receiving you. Look, the state needs workers. I mean, there's no question right now there's a huge demand for a need of workers. So how's the reception been, and how have the organizations received you?
Everybody who talks with us is appreciative of what we're doing and the fact that we're working with folks so early to get them prepped to come back. I have not had any direct interaction with any of the employers prior to the folks getting hired that have been hired so far, with the exception of we are working with a couple different consulting firms, not partnering with them, but just have a relationship with them, firms that we trust that have called and said, hey, we have a couple jobs open in this particular area. Do you have anybody? And so 2 of our folks have gotten hired through a consultant, and the feedback has been very great. In fact, one of our folks who recently got hired by a company in Westbrook through one of these great consultants that we have, we'll call him Bob. That's not his real name, but I'll call him Bob.
Protect the guilty.
So I just got an email from the consultant yesterday saying the HR person the manager who hired Bob said, do you have any more Bobs? And so I emailed him back. I said, well, I guess that means that Bob is doing a good job.
Yeah, it sure
and,
sounds like it.
And so let me go back and check. There's a couple of people who might fit that bill. So the feedback from that perspective has been good. And most of the employers that I have talked to, the HR folks that I'm trying to establish relationships with, have all been very receptive and very willing and open to receiving emails or phone calls or opening future discussions.
So what have been the challenges you faced getting the word out or getting, you know, either employers or just in the marketplace? What have been some of the challenges that the organization has been facing?
Well, the biggest challenge is people and money.
Oh, the standard, right?
Yes, we need to hire a program manager. We have a target goal at the end of 2019 to be able to do that, to handle all the different things, because I'm pretty much a one-arm paper hanger right now, which is fine. But as we're getting more people, it's becoming, you know, more challenging.
Sure.
But really, the biggest challenge for the overall concept of this preparing folks early and making sure that there's somebody pulling folks into Maine off of active duty, if you will, rather than them landing here and sort of trying to reach out to wherever they can find, is an ability to be able to proactively contact folks prior to them getting out. Right now, people hearing about or getting involved with Boots to Roots is dependent on them hearing about us, whether it's through social media or word of mouth or the website or you know, whatever channel. People have to hear about us and then reach out to us. I have no way to proactively reach out to folks who are on active duty that I think may be coming to Maine. So I've recently been working with the director of the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services, Adria Horn. She is an amazing leader for veterans in Maine and an amazing advocate. She very much believes in Boots to Roots' mission, and we are in violent agreement about the need for getting information about folks who are coming to Maine earlier. Right now, currently, everybody who separates or retires from the military receives what's called a DD-214, which is your official record of service. That record is sent electronically to the gaining states if an individual designates that what state they want that to be sent to, and that, yes, indeed, they check a box that, yes, indeed, it's okay to send that to the state. When it is sent to the state, it's sent after the person separates or retires. So we're really not fixing any of the timeline issue.
Right.
And there's not really a good record of who's actually here. Who recently separated or retired. And so we put together an issue paper and sent it down to the different transition offices for Department of Defense and also to Senator King's office. And the issue paper laid out sort of the discussion, and the recommendation was that the transition assistance program, it's about a week-long class that's given at all the different bases for folks getting out, that becomes mandatory a year prior to getting out, or as close to a year prior to separating and retiring as possible. And that when you get to that transition program, usually people have to sign their name. And if you sign your name and put your personal email and then have a little box there that says, I consent to sending, or name, personal email, and then what state you're planning to go to, and a little box that you can check off that says, I consent to sending my name and personal email to my gaining state. By doing that, the State Department of Veterans Services can get that information ahead of time and then work with whatever organizations are within their states and regions and so forth to identify the right folks to be able to work with these folks ahead of time. And somebody from the State Department of Veterans Services can actually proactively reach out to that individual because they've consented to send that information. It seems like such a simple fix.
You're talking about simple in bureaucracy? Really?
Yeah. Yes.
So simple.
Yes. But we met with Senator King a week and a half ago, and he was very receptive, and he said he would see what he can do. And so Adria's been working with his staff, we'll see if we're able to get anything pushed through. But that is probably the biggest challenge is – you know, we don't want to miss people coming back.
Right, right.
Because if you come back and you get into that financial instability, and then maybe there's some other things that occur, you know, you can quickly get into a downward spiral that becomes hard to dig out of. And there's a lot of wonderful organizations that are sort of the reactive organizations to help folks who are struggling. And they're wonderful organizations. But wouldn't it be great if we could prevent some of that on the front side by prepping people ahead of time?
Is there a coordinated effort with people helping these folks with their finances, with their housing, with their all that aspect, even past what you're talking about, which is, you know, you've started that 2 months. Is it done beforehand? That's why I'm asking. Is any of that stuff done 6 months prior to them getting out, helping them with housing and all that sort of stuff, wherever they're going to?
Well, that's incumbent upon the individual to be able to reach out and get hooked into whatever services there are.
Okay, so it's not like mandatory or anything like that. They don't provide information. They just say, hey, you need to go out and find it yourself.
Who's that? Department of Defense?
Department of Defense.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Having been on active duty for 24 years and having been a commander, I personally don't think that that's active duty's responsibility.
Okay.
You know, we have so many responsibilities. And, you know, I remember we were deploying for about 10 or 12 years every year. So we had three B-1 flying squadrons, and each squadron would deploy for 6 months, and then you'd come home for reconstitute for 6 months, and then prep again to go out another 6 months. And then in that year between your deployments, you had to do all of your upgrade training. You had to do all of, you have your new folks come in and train them. And so if somebody had put this requirement on me when I was commander to prep my folks beyond the transition program, that would have been difficult to swallow. Not that I didn't want to help my folks, but that we had other fish to fry at that time.
Yeah, I guess the real question is, I think about that, is the transition program effective? And that's a big question, right? You said it's a weak transition program they go through. I've not taken the program, so I can't speak it. You have taken the program, I'm assuming. Is it effective?
So there's a lot of thoughts out there on this. I think it's effective for laying a groundwork. And so it's about a week long. I attended the program at Andrews Air Force Base.
Yep.
In D.C. And I took a lot of good notes. They will cover basics on resumes, basics on interview prep, dress for success, veterans benefits, and so forth. They also, a lot of times, will bring in panels of employers and so forth, but those are in the local area.
Sure.
So if you have an active duty base and you're planning to stay in the local area, that transition and those connections are much, much easier as opposed to coming to Maine with no active duty base and coming from somewhere else.
Sure,
And so it lays a good foundation. But when I was done with the transition program, I said, this is great information. I took my little stack of stuff and I said, I'll get to that when I get to Maine.
Right.
Because people have so much stuff going on.
Sure.
I've got to move. I've got to, you know, close out my job. I need to do a good handoff. I need to figure out where I want to live, all this kind of stuff. So I think for the week-long transition program, for laying the groundwork and giving you checklists and things to think about is doing a job that it's supposed to do. It's like everything else. You have to go to it. You should attend it in a timely manner. If you attend it further out, you have more time to plan. But then again, life gets in the way sometimes.
Sure.
So I don't think that the transition program is necessarily inappropriate. What I think is that, again, it's that connection to where are you going. And handing off to the VA is not an efficient way to do things because people, when they retire or separate, are connected to the VA in very different ways, especially if you separate for 4 years and you don't have any benefits or anything like that, or you've retired after 24 years and you have benefits and you have disability and all these other things. So there's not sort of a streamlined manner to be able to do that through the VA. So that's why the states are such a perfect solution. The Bureau of Veterans Affairs in the states, their job is to take care of the veterans and the veteran issues of the folks who are in that state. So while folks are on active duty, the accountability is on DOD's part of these folks who are serving on active duty. Yeah. When they come to the state, the accountability is on the State Bureau of Veterans Services part, or it should be. The problem is that Bureau of Veterans Services, if they don't have the accurate information, it's a little hard to help. They're very helpful when people reach out to them, but wouldn't it be great if the gaining states could get this information from
be a little more proactive,
Department of
right?
Defense ahead of time, proactive. Then that transition assistance program can be augmented before folks come back by organizations like Boots to Roots or other organizations around the country for various different states. And the State Veterans Bureau can have someone who actually reaches out to the individual before they come back, gets some information, tells them what's available, and then does a warm handoff hookup so that they can really take that information that they used at the transition assistance program and build on it and really prep to be successful when they get back.
Sounds so simple. We're talking with Jen Fulmer. She's the executive director for Boots to Roots. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLLB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs and ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today, we're talking with Jen Fulmer. She's the executive director of Boots to Roots. I should say Colonel Jen Fulmer, right?
Colonel, U.S. Air Force, retired.
Very nice. I'll let you say the retired. So first of all, thank you for your service. I did not say that at the beginning, and I think that's very important.
It was an honor and a privilege.
Tell me a little bit about you. Let's just have a little quick conversation about you. You obviously served in the service for a while. Would you serve? What can you tell us? What was it like?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Yes.
I was in the Air Force for 24 years. I graduated from Air Force ROTC and got commissioned that way. I was primarily a B-1 pilot, flew a lot of missions in support of Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom, and did a lot of very interesting things. I will tell you the one thing that I really miss the most about the Air Force is the people. And really, you know, we at the HR conference, everyone was talking about developing people. And one of the biggest things is developing people. And that was a major part of every leader's job in the Air Force. And so I really miss doing that. But Boots to Roots actually gives me an opportunity to continue to help develop the troops as they're coming out to get into their new career roles. And I just got asked to retire one of my former maintenance crew chiefs down in Tampa next month. So that's
awesome.
That's always a real honor. So the one thing I will say is I had a great career. I had a lot of challenges, a lot of opportunities, and I'm very blessed and fortunate to be able to do that. And I will tell everybody right now that there is no worry or should be no worry about the folks who are serving the United States military because the future is in very good hands. These folks coming in these days are hands above where I was, and their capabilities and smarts are just phenomenal. It was a great career, and I'm really looking forward to being able to work with more of the folks who are coming out to start their second careers here to give back to the state of Maine.
No, that's great, and I think there's no doubt, finest military in the world, no question about that. So let's go back to Boots to Roots a little bit and talk a little bit about the bottom line and the results so far to date. Because I think, you know, when people hear this, they go, that sounds like a really nice nonprofit. That sounds like they've been in business for, you know, almost a couple of years at this mm-hmm. point. She sounds like she's got her hands full being the, you know, the chief cook and bottle washer, as they say, and everything there. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what exactly the results have been to date.
We've had some pretty good results. We are currently working with 38 folks. Our first individual, you know, it takes time, depending on how soon people reach out to us. Our first individual was hired in May of 2017. And as of 1 May, he's been in his job for a year.
Great.
He works at Togas. And we have two more folks who are will have been employed for a year at the end of this month. So we're just starting to build our sort of database of that third goal of staying employed mm-hmm. at least the first year or throughout at least 1 year after you get out of the military. We are working with 38 folks right now. We've worked with quite a few more, but some of them have decided not to come to Maine. Some of them have decided to stay on active duty a little bit longer. I actually advise folks who've only been in a very short time, if they don't have a game plan and they don't have a real reason for getting out right now, we have a long talk, heart-to-heart talk, and advise them that they probably want to stay in for a little bit longer to get a little bit more experience under the belt, to come up with a game plan, to earn some more educational benefits, you name it, the list goes on. So we have worked with some more people, but for whatever reason, they're not, you know, coming to Maine, at least not at this time. So we're currently working with 38 folks. That includes the folks who are back here and employed and the folks who are still on active duty. We have 17 folks who are physically in Maine now, so they've already arrived in Maine, and 20 folks who have been hired or enrolled in full-time school programs. So we have one person who's enrolled in a master's program for teaching full-time at University of Southern Maine, one individual who just got accepted to the University of New Hampshire for a civil engineering degree, and one individual who will begin going to the landing school this fall. Of all the folks who are employed now, that's the rest of the 20 there, the
sure.
17,
yeah.
They were all employed, or excuse me, 86% of them were employed within 2 months of getting back. So 86% is a pretty good number so far. And five of those people were employed while they were still on active duty. For example, we just had an individual come back last week from Washington State, and he was hired a month and a half prior to him coming back. We have an individual who's out in Brussels, Belgium right now, who will not be coming back for another 2 months, and he is already hired as well to start working
that's
in
great.
August when he returns.
No, that's great. You can see the results. You have a quote on site that talks, the Boots to Roots team was pivotal in my employment search when my family and I relocated to Maine from Hawaii. Why would he do that? But okay, that's fine. Yes, Hawaii. I got to talk to him. Anyways, they worked around the 6-hour time difference to make sure I was prepared as possible when I landed in Portland. I can state without reservation, I would not have the immediate success I have experienced without their efforts in the Boots to Roots team. So, you know, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? Other than his judgment is obviously poor. But clearly, other than that, it sounds like he's doing fine in terms of it.
He's actually flourishing. That individual who wrote that was hired into a high-level management position, and he recently got a raise, and he is doing all sorts of great things at that company.
You know, at the end of the day, it is about the individual, isn't it? And their ability to adapt and adjust, because it is different. Life is different outside of the service, and the private sector is a different place completely. What are some of the challenges that they tell you that they face sometimes, the candidates, when they're getting ready to leave the service, to go into a private sector? What are some of the things that they see as a big challenge, other than the language?
I will get to the challenges in 1 second, but let me just back up a little
sure.
bit. We have a peer mentor program. And our peer mentors are volunteers, and they are folks who are have separated or retired within the last 5 years so that they have a recency of transition experience, but that they're fully employed, they have a full-time job, and they're settled. And these folks are volunteers that give back as peer mentors, and they work with our folks coming back from the initial phone call that we have through the first year of employment, and then probably beyond, because our terminology is once a teammate, always a teammate.
Sure, of course.
And so the peer mentors are sort of been there, done that, been in the civilian world for a while, been in their civilian jobs for a while, and can sort of be there to be a sounding board and bounce things off of. We also have a monthly, what we call Thirsty Thursday, which is really code word for let's go have a cocktail and get this stuff off our chest. And we hold that in different places. We have one this Thursday up in Topsom, and because people live in different parts of the state. And so we hope to get a couple folks in to each one so that they can meet each other and discuss. And then usually one or two of our peer mentors comes to that as well. So these are all sort of avenues that we have to be able to keep an open dialogue with folks and allow them to be able to call and sort of vent about certain things. I will tell you some of the key feedback that I've received from folks, and I've seen the same thing, but this is good for HR folks to hear, and I raised this at the HR conference last week too, is one thing is feedback. Consistently, I get reports of lack of feedback, and that starts with setting expectations and objectives at the very beginning so that somebody understands what their objectives are, and then feedback periodically throughout that time period. I had one guy who was working for 9 months and had not one piece of feedback and was never given initial objectives or whatever. Now, it's incumbent upon folks to ask for that, too. But it really should be something that's ingrained. So that's something that really kind of consistently, not every place, but consistently has been some of the feedback. Another piece of feedback has been sort of a dog eat dog mentality that's been observed in some cases where some folks are not apt to work together as well based on a fear of losing their job. You know, I will tell you that's a really different mentality than military members are used to because, first of all, you live and die by the team in the military, quite literally sometimes. Yeah. But I've had to let certain people go in my career, military folks and civilian. If I had to let a civilian go, a civilian, you know, government employee go, that was usually a actual, you know, firing for cause. But military members, occasionally you have a military member in a job that isn't right for that job. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that they did anything immoral, illegal, or against regulations or anything like that. It's just so, and they've got capabilities and they've got skills and they have talents, but they are not the right fit for that particular job. So we have had to, you know, fire, if you will, somebody and from a particular job, but usually can find a place where they're still going to be contributing, right? So they may have been fired, which is a horrible thing to go through, but they're not in fear of losing the paycheck. They're not in fear of losing their benefits, of wondering where their family's going to be sleeping, you know, or anything like that. In the civilian world, if you are, you know, maybe not the right fit, or it comes down to after 6 months somewhere, whatever, that you're not the right fit, well, then a company has no obligation, and they have a vested interest in the bottom line, obviously. And so right. that's, and I'm not right. saying right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm saying that's just a difference.
Sure.
And so that sort of dog-eat-dog mentality sometimes is a little bit of a culture shock. It's not that it can't be handled, but folks typically are used to sort of working together towards things and really trying to develop each other, develop their subordinates. And so, again, it's not everywhere. That's just one of the common
I've heard. The people that I know that hire anybody from a military service always say that they are predominantly, for the majority, they show up on time. They work. They actually work. They're not on social media half the day. They actually focus on doing the job right the first time. And they do almost demand the feedback more because they expect it more. And so, I mean, all those are great things. And any HR professional or business owner out there should really consider that in terms of hiring people for that very reason. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopRex.org.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs and ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster. A lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Jen Fulmer, Executive Director for Boots to Roots, and that's Boots to Roots, the number, Boots, B-O-T-S, two, the number two, Roots, R-O-O-T-S.org. Jen, we've had a great talk today. I really appreciated being on. People may say, hey, how can I help? What can I do? How do I get either involved or at least get more information? Other than going to the website, what are some of the things you need?
One of the things we need is to get the word out. So just getting the word out about Boots to Roots. If you know people who are on active duty, if you have family members who are on active duty or friends who are on active duty, please get the word out that Boots to Roots exists and have people contact us before they come back, well before they come back, so we can help to prep them. That's the biggest thing to help our teammates out, which is really the bottom line of the organization. The second thing is, and I know everybody asked for this, but we need money. We can run Boots to Roots on $20,000 a year, but that's with no employees. I work full-time right now without a paycheck, and I'm not asking for money for me. I do it because I'm blessed with the ability to be able to do that when my husband has a good job and I have a retirement check. But we need to hire a program manager, really to run the program and to allow us to improve some of our processes, work on some of this coordination, work on some of those long-term fixes that we talked about as far as getting information from Department of Defense and the state and trying to come up with processes where we can fix some of these things in the future, streamline some of this stuff, not make it so hard to connect with everybody. So we have a goal of hiring a program manager by the end of 2019 and or being prepared to hire one by the end of 2019. And we have a goal of getting to $100,000. And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for some committed major donors who are willing to commit anywhere from $2,000 to $10,000 a year for 3 years. And start there and try to be able to put that base together where we can hire the right person, keep them in place, and really put some of these things, establish some of these processes, and move not just the mission forward, because the mission is pretty concrete. That's really what we do and what our goals are or why they're there. But to move the whole mission of successful transition and a successful transition in Maine forward by, you know, working with the different organizations and being able to have time to do that.
No, it's a great organization. It's certainly one that needs more attention. So I'm glad you came on the show today. Appreciate you being a guest. Again, it's bootstoroots.org. Jen Fulmer, Executive Director, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR tip of the week. Your HR tip of the week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Do you ask candidates about their desired rate of pay? Hi, this is Doug Currier from VeralDana. Typical question asked of an applicant is desired salary rate or the applicant's current rate of pay. That information is often taken into account when establishing the compensation rate contained in the job offer. Now several states and cities are making it illegal to ask a candidate his or her salary history, Massachusetts and the city of New York being two examples. We know that historically women are paid less than men for doing the same work. There's also reason to believe that women are more likely to list a lower salary rate when asked, "What is your desired salary?" It follows that taking into account an applicant's salary history when establishing a new salary rate will just perpetuate the historically discriminatory pay practices. Employers often respond that the candidate's salary information is important because it helps to understand what it will take to get the desired candidate on board. Best practice is to not ask about a candidate's salary history or desired rate of pay. You really want your salary structure to be consistent in that sense. What applicants receive from their past employers arguably is not irrelevant. Even in jurisdictions where it is not illegal to ask the question, there is a growing risk of discrimination claims based on pay inequities, and including questions about pay history will only increase the burden of defending those claims. I encourage you to contact a member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Law Group if you have a question about this or any other concern impacting your workplace.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.